This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 19th of April, 2022. We're back from our long weekend here, struggling to get ahead of the curve, just like the Fed, I guess, in terms of the news and market developments. But I think the key point here is that we're seeing just an extension of the kind of energy and mood we saw last week. We have pressure on risk appetite from this fresh big rise in crude oil prices. We'll get to you on that later, Ola. And then we also have rising U.S. yields. And that rise is concentrated at the long end, the U.S. yield curve steepening. Pretty interesting to see that the sort of the front end has sort of gelled and flattened for the last few weeks as the Fed tightening this year is, you know, we've already priced in multiple 50 basis point moves. The market doesn't seem to want to take that any higher. It's more about looking at what the quantitative tightening, I think, is going to do for longer yields and the focus there. So, you know, and we brought the 61.8% retracement into focus on the NASDAQ 100. I've got the chart up once again on slide two as a reminder. Dipped below that yesterday, just barely surviving. But Peter, where is the focus in terms of the weakness in the market here? It does look like a lot of this is the yield sensitive stuff out there, with one interesting exception being Tesla. And I don't know if you want to take that hot potato and talk about that yet, but what's your take on this market after your very long holiday, Mr. Garnery?
Thank you very much for that intro. But it is great to be back. And you're absolutely right. I mean, the U.S. equity market has been slightly on the weak side over the past week. And we had the U.S. financials earnings coming out last week. Mostly, there were some positives. Also some negatives. One of the negatives I wanted to pull out is JP Morgan Chase. They had a much higher credit provision than expected. So I think early warnings that the credit cycle is turning into a new phase for the worse, of course. And yesterday's price action, bubble stocks and next gen medicine, as you can see on slide two, were very bad. And ARK Innovation Fund. So there's these outer layers of the growth complex in the U.S. equity market is just still teetering and still weak, despite Cathie Wood is drumming up very high expectations that we could see 50% annualized returns over the next 5 years in her fund. I think it's very ridiculous. And just also very quickly, when you look at the theme basket overview, don't pay too much attention on the cannabis. We there are some data issues in that, so we sorted that out. So don't pay too much attention on those data points. I've also flagged you on the battle of Donbass, because within the last 24 hours, Russia has really accelerated their artillery bombardments, and historically, that is typically the first phase of a more and bigger offensive from the Russian side. So I think the headline risk coming out of Ukraine will intensify. And I know Ole is also nervously watching the grains market, because a lot of infrastructure in Ukraine is getting targeted very specifically, which is crumbling and crippling that part of the market, and it's causing soaring food prices. And yes, you mentioned Tesla, and I think it's a nice segue into the next slide on slide three, because while Cathie Wood is talking about a world of abundance and everything just going to the moon, I think the two key themes to still talk about is deglobalization and equities versus the physical world. And when we talk about earnings later in the podcast, I have a very interesting link to a Wall Street Journal article with Rivian CEO, so we can maybe talk about Tesla there. But look at this chart. So we've shown it before, but it's basically the total return of the MSCI World Index against the Bloomberg's Commodity Index. And you could just see what a staggering period we have been in since the financial crisis, with very cheap commodity prices and energy prices, and we have had this online boom. But we're seeing a very, very hard reset in equity prices, not only in inflation terms, but specifically in the physical world in commodity terms. And the deglobalization, the war in Ukraine and China's response in this COVID will accelerate all of these deglobalization trends. And I think we're moving into a very, very new world for equities. And it's something we're going to talk much more about. So I'll shut up here, because you two other guys need to come into the conversation. But it's really, take this chart as your main picture for how to address your portfolio, I would say.
Yeah, and I actually brought your points on this very chart into the conversation a couple of times last week. And we were looking at these equity markets and wondering, this backdrop is just horrible. Why aren't equities lower? Well, they are lower. But what are they lower against? Well, they're lower against real stuff. And so it really makes it uncertain what equities will do in a nominal sense, relative to the history. If the history is only the last 20 years, you may have to dig back deeper into history to find out what equities were doing. I mentioned some of the bizarre behavior of equities, for example, in real terms during the Weimar hyperinflation, pointing out that equities bottomed in a real sense, actually in late 1922, before rallying rallying against real hard assets during the worst phase of the hyperinflation. This is not to draw equivalence to say that we're having a hyperinflation. It's just to say real versus nominal is where you need to be in your looking and where you're looking at this market. And in terms of real activity and hard asset prices, we've had this big backup here, and one of the key inputs into the global economy, crude oil. Take us through what's aggravating this latest rise here in oil prices. And I really notice, I can't help but notice that when you look over at the U.S., you're seeing this the natural gas price. We have LNG shipments now coming to Europe to bail out some of the European supply shortages, but that's creating maybe a very differently balanced market in the U.S., where we just saw the highest weekly close since 2008, if I'm not mistaken, looking at the chart this morning.
Yeah, and that's also having an impact on grain prices. We can talk about that in a little while. But let's just the engine of the gold commodity market is the energy space, is crude oil, and normally when we talk about price change in the crude oil market, it's normally due to a few hundred thousand barrels change in supply and demand, and that's having an impact on the price. Right now, we're dealing with millions of barrels on either side. And that's obviously making a volatile market, and one which is very, very difficult to look to find any decent direction in. But we are high, as John mentioned. We're back above the levels from before the SPR release was announced. That's obviously quite bullish for the market. This not having a bigger negative impact that the US and IEA will unleash barrels into the market. But right now, three major things. Right now, we got 2 million barrels. Less consumption in China right now due to lockdowns. That obviously should be a negative. But on the other hand, we have Russian crude still being avoided by buyers, especially in the Western world. I put a small insert here on slide 5. You can see Russian crude, especially from the Urals, which is the middle part of the year of Russia, the ones that normally goes to towards Europe. It's now trading at a discount close to $40 below Brent. In a world where we got oil scarcity, that's clearly not a sign, signal that the market doesn't need the oil. It's a sign that the people don't want to buy that oil. So that's adding to the unease. And then just over the last few days, we have renewed unrest, social unrest in and lockdowns in Libya. Nearly around 500,000 barrels a day has been cut off. And that Libya is a key supplier to Europe, and with us. With Europe trying to get rid of Russian supplies of fuel, then Libyan oil is paramount important. So these are the reasons why we're moving higher. So where do we go? Difficult to say. I think we are already at levels where we are seeing some levels of demand destruction. We're seeing the World Bank reducing global growth. So we will see demands eventually start to taper off, or growth taper off, and that will help stabilize the prices. But we're still in a flux with so many major uncertainties. And I just want to highlight on the same slide as well. It's getting a little bit long here, but I just put in the June 2022, the blue line, which is the close to the front month of the market. You can see the volatility there with ups and downs. So this is obviously a lot of that is speculative interest moving in and out the market. But if we move further out, a year out to June 2003, you can see the price just continues steadily to move higher, basically indicating the market doesn't see any kind of light at the end of the tunnel, at least just yet. And also you have to remember the oil that being released by the SPR right now, that's leased, eventually has to be bought back and put back into reserves. And that basically means these backed longer dated contracts stay supported right now.
Yeah, I find that an interesting development when you see the further out contracts, the back end of the curve backing up to new highs for the cycle, even above the highest daily closes during the initial outbreak of the situation in Ukraine. But we need to stay on commodities because we have new concerns here for social stability around the world and price pressures in general with these grain prices. I mean, we're getting back towards these very high levels in corn. I think it got very slightly higher, if I'm not mistaken, back a decade plus ago with the big spike in corn. But what's the latest driver here besides just the background pressure of Ukraine, et cetera?
Well, unfortunately, it's weather, and that's the one we can't control. Obviously, we can't control Putin either right now, but weather we have no influence on, at least in the short term. And we right now across the U.S., especially the Midwest, we have drought conditions. We've had heat conditions, and we also got cold conditions, basically meaning that the winter wheat is being the quality is very poor. We got delays to the planting. We have the Russian or the Ukraine war dragging on, basically saying that we saw some recent estimates for how much the harvest could be hit this year. And it is a significant hit. And these are really key suppliers to the global market. And on top of that, as John mentioned, the recent surge in the gas price in the U.S. has also lifted further the fertilizer cost in the U.S. We were already in the Europe and the rest of the world facing penalizing high fertilizer prices because of the high international gas price. But now with U.S. gas price going up, being such a key feedstock to production of fertilizers, we're seeing that up as well. So corn above $8 in the front end, wheat moving up as well, soybeans moving up. And clearly we can manage without energy. It's going to hit our economy, but we cannot manage without food. So this is really one we need to keep a close eye on.
Yeah, and that corn is the most fertilizer hungry of the grain crops. So I guess that's the reason behind the impact here. All right, just very briefly in FX, we have really an extension of what we've been seeing already with those long U.S. yields still pressuring higher and long yields elsewhere. And the Bank of Japan having no change of tune. We are just seeing this remarkable pressure on the Japanese yen continuing, hitting new highs not seen since early 2002. There's a big major chart point, not until 135, however, but a big extension further overnight, just the market essentially thumbing its nose at the Bank of Japan and Ministry of Finance, who have been out even upping their verbal rhetoric. The market saying, show me the money. Which I think we will have to do at some point, but if they do it at 130 or not to 150, that is the unknown. At some point, we'll see a big splash of intervention. We'll see some big way, the two-way action intraday. But as long as the underlying fundamentals and the backdrop don't change, i.e. as long as the Bank of Japan is sticking to its guns, in an environment where yields are rising, commodity prices are rising, that pressure will continue on the Japanese yen. So this is a very dynamic situation. We're talking about the most remarkable move really in decades in terms of the persistence of this trend. So remarkable stuff. And you see this reflected in the FX board in terms of the trend readings, noting that dollar strength as well. And we're seeing, of course, the euro dollar below 108 after the dovish ECB last week. European rates are able to continue to rise, but they are doing so with low beta to the rest of the world. And gold, really disappointing. I don't know if you want to jump in here with a brief comment. We tried that 2000 level and it got bashed back below. The stronger dollar, higher yields, I guess not helping, is just the sort of reflexive headline on that.
Yeah, that is just the battle that continue to rage in the gold market. I do note that the last week was the first time in several weeks that we actually saw both leverage funds and ETF buyers being or ETF investors being pointing in, or they're buying, well, pointing in the same direction, both buying basically. Leverage funds have been selling for quite a while. They started to pick up again last week as the technical outlook improved. But as we mentioned, we tried the 2000 yesterday. It was a low liquidity day, so potentially one that was easy to move the price. So we haven't really had a proper challenge to that level yet. But I think the overall remains that yields are moving higher, yes. But at the same time, we're also seeing asset managers returning to gold because they worry about inflation, they worry about growth, they worry about the general level of volatility we're seeing both in the bond and the stock market. And that's still providing that underlying support. So 1965 today is the, I would say, relatively key level of support that needs to hold.
All right. And then just finally on FX, I want to mention that technically very interesting levels, dollar Canada, have been in play. Those have survived so far. The Canadian dollar rising again. The Australian dollar really facing existential support levels as well. And we're gonna park up Peter for another 30 seconds here because you did put a chart up on the Australian dollar. It's really curious to me to see with this. I mean, the fundamental support for Australia, given its commodity portfolio, and we've talked about this before. It's pretty remarkable to see the Australian dollar has managed to fall against the U.S. dollar. It just shows the degree to which global liquidity and these other aspects of financial markets are so important in helping to support the U.S. dollar But just a couple of perspectives here, Ola, on the Australian dollar and its commodity portfolio.
Yeah, and it also just ties back to what Peter said at the top, basically how the real world is starting to outperform the stock market in general, and the Australian stock market is put in the ASX there as well. It's pretty close to its record high levels. So it is one of the best performing markets because there's such a large percentage of the stock index is basically coming from the production of raw materials. So we just put in this table here from slide 7 from 2020. Since then, I'm sure we talked about the gas output is probably even higher. It's one of the world's biggest exporters of gas, well, a major export of wheat, iron ore, which we obviously know about. So they're just sitting on the sweet spot here with this very strong demand for commodities at a time where where Russian exports are not in demand.
All right, we need to get back to you, Peter, because this is earnings season kicking off as of last week, the big financials reporting, as you mentioned. What's our focus this week as we look at earnings?
Yeah, so on slide 8, we have this week's earnings releases, and there's quite a few. I've highlighted those in red, as you can see here. So today we have Johnson & Johnson, a very big consumer name in consumer healthcare here in the US. And we have Netflix, which will kick off the technology earnings season. We have Lockheed Martin, not typically a company we would highlight, but given the war in Ukraine and the ramp up in military spending around the world, especially in the US and Europe, very key to listen to what the management is saying about the outlook. And then Halliburton, obviously being one of the largest oil services companies in the world, they have a very good idea of where demand for drilling activity is headed, and we would expect it's increasing. There's a lot of energy coming through in the US in terms of allowing new drilling and increase investments, so that's a key one to follow. And then tomorrow, ASML, one of the biggest equipment makers, or I think it is the biggest equipment maker for the semiconductor industry, given all the bottlenecks we talked about. And then Sandvik, it's an industrial company here in Europe, a good one to follow. And then Tesla, of course, being the big name tomorrow. And this is back to the physical world. We've hit a roadblock. All these shortages we're seeing, massive shortages of goods coming out of the Shanghai region because of the lockdown there, but also this headline from the Wall Street Journal we've put in here, Rivian CEO, he's basically saying that, the shortages we have seen in semiconductors will be nothing compared to what we will soon see in terms of shortage for electric vehicles, especially on the battery side. So, and we know Tesla has hiked prices twice due to the galloping prices on lithium and aluminium, etc. So I think there's a lot at stake here for Tesla and the market when they report tomorrow. Procter & Gamble and consumers as well tomorrow. And then on Thursday, on the battery side, Contemporary Amperex Technology, also called CATL out of China, is the biggest battery maker in the world. Unfortunately, still a company that cannot be accessed by the wider public outside China. So, but we're still highlighting it's important to follow. Nidec and ABB, big on automation and robotics. NextEra Energy is one of the large utility companies in the US that are transitioning to only having natural gas and renewable energy sources. And then Snap will kick off the social media earnings season on Thursday. And I've put in as well here on slide 8, a chart over the quarterly net profit margin, because we already have had a couple of earnings releases already, so we have a few updated figures. And as you can see, not for the Nasdaq 100 yet, but at least for the S&P 500 and the MSCI World Index, we're seeing those net profit margins continue to slide for another quarter straight here. So it's and I think this really is the overall theme to watch, is to what extent we're just mean reverting back and maybe even below the points in terms of profit margins we had before the pandemic.
All right, and that takes us to the macro calendar, slide 9. Some interesting data points out all week, including today Canada and US. So watching how the speed at which these rising yields will impact the housing markets. There is a lag on this. So we are at a remarkable new highs in terms of the 30-year mortgage rate in the US. We're at major levels for the Canadian 5-year, which is the input yield for Canadian mortgages, but their housing markets have been on fire. And we're still just just now sort of getting back, at least in terms of the New Home Survey, one of the more leading surveys out there on the status of the U.S. market. We're just now getting back close to the very highs of the prior 2005, 2006, 2007 housing bubble in the U.S. So we've come off the top, but we're still at historically very elevated levels in terms of activity, in terms of sentiment. So it's going to take some more doing. And I just want to just a brief wrap on a couple of data points from last week. That Michigan sentiment number rebounding very smartly in the U.S. This one was, it's still not very high, but it was coming off of very, very low levels and makes you wonder to the degree to which some of that was linked to the outbreak of war in Ukraine. The fact that it's managed to bounce to this degree, and we saw a pretty solid retail sales number as well for March out of the U.S. It just looks like it's going to take quite some doing to slow down this this U.S. economy. So we'll look for evidence of that as well. And then we have a couple of little bits and pieces that are interesting for individual currencies, the quarterly CPI data point out of New Zealand. We have Powell out in public this week. It's not a, the context is not particularly related to making comments on policy, but of course we have to pay attention to what he's saying. And we have the first flash PMIs for the month out on Friday. That's put down the Eurozone ones, but this is a private set of surveys. So they're for the entire world, really, from China to Japan, Europe, et cetera. Also the US for the market survey of PMIs for April. So watching all that unfold this week, a couple of pivotal technical levels in play, at least in the US market, and interesting to watch how this all unfolds. But we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.